Speaking to the San Francisco Ad Club, Mr. Stan Freeberg.
Thank you very kindly, Bill. Today is December the 3rd, a date which all good Americans should remember, for indeed, that is the day that my capital album, The Best of the Stan Freeberg Show, is 6 months old. This is the best moments from the CBS radio series I did last summer, and I had thought up until when it came out that they might disappear into the airwaves. But the Capitol Record people, in a rare blend of philanthropy and money hunger, have rushed out the highlights. The price is $10. The only reason, it really is pertinent, the only reason I bring it up is that there is in this sketch, rather in this album, a sketch pertinent to this luncheon entitled Gray Flannel Hat Full of Teenage Werewolves. This is a very moving story of a werewolf who looks like a normal werewolf to the other werewolf, but carries within himself, locked within himself, the terrible knowledge that when the sun comes up, he turns into an advertising man. So he goes to Madison Avenue and takes the name of Bryce Acker. I'm trying to think of an obscure name. And becomes very successful until there's an eclipse of the moon one day at noon, and he's caught at his desk with his fangs out. I might be able to sell it to NBC Television, a television sketch. I was over at NBC the other day talking to General Sarnoff. I said to him, "Who are you?" He said to me, "I'm General Sarnoff." I said, "That's your story, fella." "Oh, no, you're General Sarnoff." He said, "Well, you just have to trust me." I said, "No, you have to do better than that. Prove it." And before my very eyes, he figured out a better way to transmit color, invented an electronic bathing suit, and tapped out "The Titanic is sinking" on my forehead. I was so impressed, I put my head on his shoulder and wept openly for a full 3 minutes. I could not have done otherwise. He had his star caught in my ear. He said to me, "Stanley, you have the earmarks of a star." Subject, but I was being pinned down by the United Press about my latest Capitol record, Green Christmas. And a lot of people asked me, where can they hear this? They seem to be dialing around and have a hard time hearing it. There is an FM station in Berkeley that plays it every morning at 3 a.m.
I know what you want to do.
Actually, the only reason that I brought up the Capitol album about the werewolves and so forth is that in this album is a commercial that I thought you might enjoy listening to for a new product called Puff Grass.
A word from the newest member of the E Corporation of America's breakfast family, Puff Grass.
Puff Grass, eat Puff Grass. Chock full of vitamins, more pill too. It's good for puppy.
Me and you.
My boys and girls. This is Jet Crash. I'm a test pilot. Believe you me, I couldn't break through the sound barrier every morning. If I didn't start off my day with a stomach. Full of puff grass. Cows can't be wrong. The only breakfast food containing chlorophyll, 2. Yes, when us test pilots are all alone up there, pulling out of a sonic dive on the verge of blacking out, and they pull off 9 G's on our body, I can't tell you what a comfort it is to have that extra chlorophyll protection. Makes me the most popular test pilot of the annual Lockheed prom. Yes, you can spot the puff grass eaters in any crowd. They got a green mouth. Misled in thinking that I came here today solely as an entertainer to leaven the stern facts of selling the product, I'd like to give you the short history of the beginnings of an advertising man. Me. A little over 3 years ago, I was approached by a man from Cunningham & Wall. That is, a man who was then with what is now Cunningham. Structure you'll never run into unless you hang around advertising. Anyhow, at that time, I disliked all agency men. I dealt with them for a long time as an entertainer, and they impressed me as being terribly cautious. They all seemed horrified at using humor. Selling products, they used to tell me, is no laughing matter, Freebird. Know your voice. I soon discovered that in most cases, it was not the client who was being afraid of being bizarre at all. It was his advertising agency. I'll tell you that, I never frightened a client yet, but I sure scared the devil out of a lot of agency men. I see what I thought was a pretty mild idea turned gray flannel white overnight. In my experience, more effective, audacious ideas to die of starvation is trying to grope their way out of the agency than ever get killed off by the client. At any rate, this advertising man I was telling you about, Howard Gossage, who was then with Cunningham & Walsh, is now a principal of Weiner & Gossage. Am I confusing you? It's hard to keep track today. Ruth Rothman Ryan is now Irwin Wacy Ruth Rothman Ryan. I hear they're going to start a sequel agency, Son of Irwin Wacy. Good. And, I began some exploratory talks 3 years ago with Gossage, Cunningham, and Walsh. It occurred to me that when it came to advertising men, I had no right to generalize. For here indeed were men, advertising men, who were not suspicious of humor. Together we came up with several spots for Contadina tomato paste, including a jingle composed almost entirely of the phrase, "Who puts 8 great tomatoes in that little bitty can?" I figured that any agency who would present such an understandable, interesting, unpretentious, exact, memorable, if lousy, description of a product to a client must have a few guts around the old shop after all. Well, the client loved it, the consumers loved it, and we moved a lot of tomato paste. That year, 1956, advertising age selected it along with "You'll Wonder Where the Yellow Went." That's one of the, there's no tie in there. Unless they were canned bananas. As one of the two top radio campaigns of 1956, all of a sudden, I was in advertising. Recently, I just finished my fifth campaign for Contadino. As far as the public is concerned, I just spent my summer shuttling back and forth between Capitol and the Chevy show. They would probably be somewhat amazed to learn that my main occupation today is helping move products off the shelf. For 1957, I formed Freebird Limited, but not very, end of friends. A freelance creative organization equipped to work in all media, but specializing specifically in radio, television, and space. I should always be grateful that there was a place in San Francisco called the Bryce Acker Wheeler Division of Cunningham and Walsh, where a man who thought humor might work might try his wings. My friend Bill Shaw has asked me to talk to you today about how to be offbeat without being off base and limit the discussion to the field of radio. We can do that. First, why be offbeat at all? The average person hears more noise in one day than their great-grandfather heard in a lifetime. It should be obvious to the people in the field of advertising that a woman hears enough traffic noise, jet noise, industrial noise, and child noise without having to listen also to this kind of noise.
Come in then!
About the ears with a baseball bat of hard sell, or what is worse to me, just plain dull sell, for so long now that it's a little hard to get the old message through the scar tissue. You might say she's developed a sort of cauliflower receptivity. I believe the best way of breaking through is by being A, musically memorable, B, absolutely unorthodox in approach, C, humorous, D, all three whenever possible. At Freebird Limited, we avoid hard sell like the plague. It worked just fine for George Washington Mill, but that was another era. It's been a long time since Lucky Strike Green went to war, and as far as I'm concerned, that kind of sell went out with spitting on the table. That scene? Most advertising men I talk to claim I should save my breath because they don't believe in hard sell anyway. Yet I can't flip through half a dozen pages of a newspaper, or drive more than half a block down the highway, or listen to the radio for more than 15 minutes without being aware of some glaring example of the hardest kind of sell possible. I guess the fairies must come in the night and write all that dull copy. Allow me to point out one of the most glaring examples of dull sell that I have ever heard.
How about that rain? And I just shined my shoes.
Well, what are you worried about? There's no need for rain and sloppy weather to spoil that shine.
Hey, who are you?
I'm Kingly, the horse of Kingly Shoe Polish, a kind that's made with costliest waxes and more effective dyes to protect your shoes against water and keep your shine bright in spite of bad weather and hard wear.
Say, that's for me, Kiwi, if it's true, but can you prove it?
Sure. See these shoes here? They've just been splattered with rain and muddy water, as you can see. Now look, I'll just give them a few quick drops.
Look at that shine. You say Kiwi Polish did that?
Right. Kiwi is the world's largest selling shoe polish, preferred by U.S. Marines and outdoorsmen everywhere. That's because it actually protects water, as well as giving you a brilliant shine that lasts longer.
Man, it's easy to use, too. Goes on with less rubbing. Kiwi, you're my friend.
Get Kiwi, spelled K-I-W-I, Kiwi shoe polish.
When you hear something like that, it makes you wonder why advertising works at all. The only worst line I've heard for shoe polish is shine all is rub-a-dub, shine them up. Which not only doesn't make sense, it doesn't even rhyme. I couldn't resist writing a little commercial on the train based on the Kiwi spot. How about that? Rain, and I just shined my shoes.
Well, what are you worried about? There's no need for rain and sloppy weather to spoil that shine.
Hey, who are you?
I'm Kiwi, the voice of Kiwi shoe polish.
Yeah?
The kind that's made with costlier waxes and more effective dyes to protect your shoes against water, to keep your shine bright in spite of bad weather and hard wear.
Oh, that Kiwi.
Well, you're pretty hostile.
Well, you're pretty fresh. Look, who asked you? Here I am, all I said was, once rain, and I just shined my shoes, and right away you go into a commercial.
What do you want from me? I'm a talking shoe polish can. I talk. Right away you hate me.
I don't hate you, I just don't believe in you. I don't believe in any talking shoe polish can.
What's not to believe? Here I am, I talk. Be tolerant.
All right, I'm tolerant. I believe you. Now what?
Now we start the commercial again.
Okay.
Ready? Ready.
How about that? Wet concrete, and I just shine my...
Right now,
Mama. Come on, finish the commercial.
Folks, for the shiniest concrete in town, K-I-W-I, Kiwi.
That spot is available. For all I know, the man who wrote the Kiwi spot, the first one, may be in this room. And if he is, I'm terribly sorry. But I can't actually believe that anybody in advertising in 1958 would sit down at a typewriter and write a commercial like that, believing that anybody would possibly listen to all that dullness, and if they did, could possibly give a damn about Kiwi shoe polish when they got through hearing. People are not morons. There have been some kind of strange statistics that have been going around for years now, claiming that the mass public all have minds of 12-year-olds. Anybody who believes that had better get out of advertising. When I first started making records 8 years ago, people told me that stuff is too sharp, the public won't dig it. You're giving them too much credit and so forth. But after having sold between 4 and 5 million records, I can tell you one thing. Don't underestimate the American public and don't play down with them. There's a lot of intelligence out there in listener land, and listener land is buying land. Why do I have such faith in humorous advertising? Simply because most people will do anything for a laugh. They will drive miles to a nightclub, pay money to go to a theater, go to almost any length to watch a comedian. They watch a television show, and the thing they retain most are the jokes. You never heard anybody, for example, say, "Boy, Marge and Gower Champion did a pirouette last night you should have seen." Or, "Let me tell you about this trick Maverick played on the bad guy." Or, "Did you hear Edie Cormier sing Mountain Greenery last night?" Why? Never. Now, all these people are fine performers, but aside from an overall pleasant memory,
There are no distinct, isolated things they said or did that make you grab somebody and want to repeat it to them the next day. Unless maybe Edie Gorman's dress slipped down. Conversely, how many people have grabbed you on Monday morning and said, did you hear what Sid Caesar said last night? Or Goble pulled a good one? Or did you see that thing where Steve Allen, etc.? This is simply because humor contains that intangible magic something that makes you, as you are witnessing it or hearing it, already start laying plans to repeat it the next day. I.e., wait till I tell Charlie that one, or I must remember to tell it to Marion. Since it is the sponsor's fervent desire that a listener or a viewer retain the message of his commercial, or better still, repeat it to other people, why then do I believe in humor as a great commercial vehicle? As Jack Webb once said, you figure it out. But does humor really sell? I'm afraid it does. I have watched it work time and time again with frightening accuracy. Now, because I know most account men are interested basically in statistics, and also because our clients enjoy having their names mentioned in the speech, I'd like to mention that among those we produce successful commercials for are Z paper products, Nuvo margarine, Contadina tomato paste, and whole field tomatoes, Belfast beverages, picked sweet frozen foods, butternut coffee, instant Ralston cereals, wax decks, wax paper, and the Bank of America. Besides just a couple of sales results, the Bank of America has been using, as you know, an extensive billboard campaign in Southern California picturing two men from outer space. The radio spots we did for the bank's agency, Johnson & Lewis, integrated the campaign nicely by bringing the two spacemen to life with the line, we'd like to see something in Earth money. The friendly man at the bank gives them a substantial time plan loan without batting an eye, and an announcer's voice inquired with pleasant jazz underscoring, would you like to see something in Earth money? See Bank of America for a time plan loan. Here in San Francisco, a retired Army colonel walked into a bank and opened an account for $10,000 because, quote, my wife likes your radio commercials, unquote. There are other instances. Since the campaign only ran for the month of July, it's a pretty interesting coincidence to note that for the month of July, the Bank of America reported time plan loans were up 33%. A year ago, the advertising manager of Butternut Coffee, together with his representative from the Buchanan Thomas Agency in Omaha, flew out to Hollywood to pay me a visit. They confided to me that they spent 5 years developing a new instant coffee dissolved in hot or cold water in 1 second flat. Since they didn't have enough budget for an extensive television buy, I advised them to go all out in radio, which happens to be my favorite medium. They told me they were a little sheepish about being the last coffee company on the market to introduce instant, and would rather not mention the fact that it took them 5 years to develop. The whole campaign around the 5 years theme. We created 7 one-minute commercials, radio commercials, all of which contained a 20-second jingle proclaiming, 5 years isn't exactly instant, but that's how long it took, etc. Spots hit the air in January 1958 in 13 Midwestern states, excluding California. After 4 weeks on the air, using no medium but radio, Butternut had sold over 1 million jars of their new instant coffee. Freebird Limited is not an advertising agency. Perish the inference. In every case, we have worked through the agency which represented the client. The period of time we work with an agency, no matter how brief, our only desire is to become an extension of the creative department of that agency, or better yet, an integral part of it. In the case of Butternut Coffee, it was no accident that the commercials came out good. We achieved the perfect relationship between client, agency, and a freelance production company. By working together with mutual respect and understanding, we created that rare climate of creativity in which successful commercials exist. The Buchanan Thomas Agency in Omaha, having first recognized the power of humor, recognized in the same instant that it is a fragile thing best left to professionals. Humor in the hands of a novice is like a gun in the hands of a child. And here we come to what I am most concerned with in the increasing atmosphere of humorous commercials, the danger of its being off base. What we should be concerned with is not whether humor works or not. It does. What doesn't work is to assign their creation to amateur humorous commercial writers. A humorous radio commercial is constructed just like a humorous television sketch, book, or a play. Many agencies today, anxious to jump on the humor bandwagon, are forcing its creation by people who simply have no business creating it. An account man is not expected to be an artist to do layouts. A research man is not expected to buy time. Why then force an otherwise fine copywriter who, say, writes beautiful automobile copy to become A. Burroughs overnight? Knowing a lot of funny stories does not a humorist make. If agencies hope to sell with humor, they should be prepared to hire bona fide comedy writers to work within their agency, as several agencies I know have done, or go to a freelance organization set up to do this. The existence of Freebird Limited is justified by agencies realistic enough to admit that, like finished art, animation, or a study by Dr. Ernest Dichter, professional humor might just be something they have to go outside the agency to get. So much for the hard sell. Speech runs any longer, I'm going to sell screenwriters to the Universal. Here is a commercial. Now, obviously produced by the agency for Royal Crown Cola. It makes a brave attempt to jump on the humor bandwagon. But how does it miss?
This is J. Benny Goosefield with that pioneer space traveler, Professor Von Altitude. Professor, you flow higher than any other man. How do you do it?
Well, now, it's like this. You've got to study like crazy. The stars, the planets, and all that other stuff. And then comes the big day.
Up you go in your rocket.
Rocket? I wouldn't go in one of those crazy things. I got a lift with RC.
All the brightest lift of the day, brighten up the RC come away.
Yes, today better taste calls for Royal Crown Cola. What a lift! Why do you think I refuse to go to the moon? Well, I'll tell you, there's no RC up there, that's one.
Why, there's a lift without light, there's all brightness without lift. Get a vote for that, be your search will agree, it's the brightest lift of the day.
RC Cola is out of this world.
Well, the first place he just contradicted himself that RC is out of this world, and then he said he couldn't get it on the moon. Well, here's somebody had with what they thought was a pretty good line. Well, you get a lift with RC. So somebody else probably said, hey, we have a guy who gets a lift into space with RC Cola. Get it? Lift, space. Very funny. So they incorporated a jingle, which was pretty good, and hired an actor who thought he sounded like Ed Wynn. The only thing is, it simply sounds amateurish. Lines like it's out of this world are just not up to professional comedy standards. It's like a Henny Youngman reject. Never forget, that's the same radio speaker that Jack Benny came out of for 20 years. And don't think the people at home don't know the difference between good construction and bad construction, humor and just plain silliness. The only reaction a listener could get from that commercial is that they might be embarrassed for a Royal Crown Cola, which is somehow not exactly what the client had in mind, I don't think. That's what I mean when I say humor is a fragile thing. By sheer coincidence, I have now queued up two commercials that we did for Z Paper Products, a division of Crown Zellerbach through Cunningham and Walsh here in San Francisco. I play them because they contain all the things the Royal Crown commercial did. Humor, music, and an offbeat approach.
What? This lady says she slipped a roll of Z paper towels on her player piano and found it played Japanese Sandman.
It did.
Yeah, she said she just put it in the piano to play the perforation.
Yeah, well, she's supposed to dry her hands on it, things like that.
Well, maybe it was a giant economy roll.
Yeah, even so, Z won't play Japanese Sandman. However, just to make sure, slip a roll of Z towels on the office player piano. You punk.
All right. The office player.
Soft about your hand, yeah. Soft enough for cleaning.
Paper towels.
Say,
about 2 weeks, Doctor.
Can you describe them for me?
Oh, sure. It's like this weeny, weeny little voice, and it goes Z-E-E spell Z. Now, listen. Ben, did you hear that?
Did I hear what?
The weeny, weeny little voice singing Z-E-E spell Z.
No, what does that mean? Z-E-E spell Z.
You know, it's like kitchen towels, paper napkins, and bathroom tissue. Ben, did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear anything.
Well, put your stethoscope on my head.
All right. You certainly have a weeny, weeny little head. No, I didn't hear anything.
I guess I'm healed.
Fine. Well, Miss Pomeroy, another cured patient.
Yes.
Did you hear something, Miss Pomeroy?
Game plan. I would just like to touch briefly on the use of humor as a hook and a hook only. I don't think it works. You don't start off with a bizarre approach and then, in effect, clear your throat and say, "But seriously, folks." People feel cheated, and what's more, their mind goes out for lunch. Here's an example of someone who did just that.
Listen. What? I think I heard something in the underbrush. I don't hear anything. Listen.
Fat old American, what do you get? Takes BS spaghetti.
And that's it. Never go back to the jungle, never explain it. I'm really sore at that, Tom. I believe it is possible to entertain right down to the last second. Even when we only have a few seconds to play with. For example, here's a new one we just did for instant butternut.
So you're one of the mighty crystals found in new instant butternut coffee.
Yeah, I dissolved in 1 second flat. Pour a little of that water on me.
Okay.
Now you see how quickly I dissolve.
In case you don't, it's contadina tomato paste.
The thing that makes that work is it contains the three things I said, humor, offbeat approach, and music. But they're all interwoven. Right? It doesn't skid to a halt with the humor, and then the announcer comes in, and then back into the music. It's a very delicate fabric, and it must be woven delicately. Just so you don't think I only brought my own commercials along here, are three what I consider magnificent, humorous commercials. Just to prove you don't have to go outside the agency if you hire the right people. The first one is for Dodge and was written by Ed Beattie of Grand Advertising. Ed used to be a disc jockey and a professional comedy writer. The second one is for Mary Ellen's Jams and Jellies. It was written by Alan Walsh, a professional comedy writer formerly with UPA Cartoons and NBC, who worked on the staff of Bill Baskin and Ron Feely here in San Francisco and wrote it for them. The third one for Calso Water was written and enacted by Bob and Ray, who independently produced it for Young and Rubicam. All three make attempts to be funny and are funny. They carry the distinctive marks of professionalism.
Say, come on for a spin in my new 57 car.
Swell, Frank.
Hey, Frank,
there are no seats in this car.
I know that. Sit right down here on the floor.
Why did you take the seats out?
I want to sit close to the road, like in a wing-swept Dodge.
You mean a swept-wing Dodge? But you can't see out of this car.
I know, that is the one bad part of it.
Watch out, Frank. Why didn't you buy a swept-wing Dodge in the first place?
Just pass up the bargain I got on this car?
There's no such thing as a bargain on a 57 car that isn't really new.
No?
No. Look, you got an old-fashioned gear shift. Dodge has push buttons.
Yeah?
You got coil springs. Dodge has torsion bars.
Look out there.
Oh, it's not moving out loaded, boy. Gosh, I did for a new car and I didn't get one to move.
And here you sit driving on the floor.
I'm convinced. Where is the nearest Dodge dealership?
Where is it? We just ran into one.
Here, I wish you wouldn't bring the London Times to breakfast with you. I'd like to talk to you about Reggie.
Reggie? Reggie?
Our son, dear. He's in America.
Wondered why he was so late getting down to breakfast.
He has a month. It was he who sent you to Mary Ellen's black cherry jam you've got your elbow in.
Oh, that was so.
Try some.
I say, even better than English cherry jam. Marvelous tastes of cherries. And I like that French flavor of Paris tweed.
That's the real jacket, dear. That cherry jam itself tastes only of the cherries. Reggie says that's because the Mary Ellen's people never use more than a cup of sugar to every cup of fruit. So you get the flavor of the luscious black cherry, not just the seasons of the sugar.
Well, that's bright little speech, my dear. Wherever did you learn it?
Oh, Reggie, dear.
Reggie, when is that boy coming down to breakfast? I'd like to have you try some of this Mary Ellen's black cherry jam.
C.W. Jones speaking, president of the Council Club. I'm strolling across the new bridge just erected by Richard Stanwood here with me, enjoying council.
How do you do, Butler?
Would you tell us, Mr. Stanwood, why the bridge stops right here, 100 yards from the opposite shore?
Well, it's simple, Mr. Jones. We just plain ran out of money. And you know the council, please.
Yes.
That's good. Refreshing. Council sure picks me up after a bad night.
Council is wonderful, Mr. Stanwood, but not this bridge.
I said we're out of money, and it's a hand-to-mouth operation here. Patrols come in, we'll have enough money, I hope, to extend the bridge to the opposite shore.
Doesn't anyone ever complain about having to stop right here in the middle?
Well, they haven't had much money. They do complain, says Jones.
Well, they don't.
What's the matter, Jones? You look shaky.
Oh, hand me that council. I need it.
Smart boy, Jones. You're going places. That's four men to the 1.5 of Dan.
Last spot I'd like to play now. A couple of excerpts from the campaign that we've been running in Los Angeles for regular butternut coffee, in which we decided to kid original cast musical albums like Oklahoma. The songs, rather than mentioning the product, are instead written about the place in which it is made, Omaha. Over the past 3 months, the manager of butternut coffee, our advertising manager, told me that Omaha has become a household word in Los Angeles, and they're thinking of changing the name of the coffee to Omaha Coffee. And I, conversely, I suggested that they change the name of Omaha to Butternut, Nebraska. carried with it certain complications. For example, we then have an insurance company called Mutual of Butternut. I don't think it's going to work. But anyway... there were 3 1-minute commercials with a song in each one, which comprised the score, rather. And I never compromised. And I incorporated them into one long 6.5-minute commercial, which is the world's longest commercial or shortest musical, as you will. This has been playing once a week in Los Angeles on KMPC. I'll play one of the 1-minute spots first, then Omaha. And finally, we made this 1-minute animated commercial subliminal. Before I sit down, I'd like to say that I may have stepped on a lot of people's toes today, and some of your eyes spoken out of turn for a man who has only been in your field for a couple of years. But San Francisco is as good a place as any to get something off your chest. Some people have called me, among other things, a brash young punk. Howard Gottlieb always says that the only difference between Freeberg now and Freeberg when he's 70 is that then he'll be a brash old punk. I came today for the purpose of making one point. Humor is a potent and proven advertising weapon when used correctly. My concern is not so much for the use of Freeberg Limited, as it is the misuse of humor. I happen to have a personal interest in this future, in or out of the advertising field. Assuming that you're planning to applaud, I'll ask that you hold it until after the running of the film, following which I will be available for perhaps another 5 minutes for questioning or stoning as a kid. Yes, but it's not.
Without being off base, thank you, Stan Freeberg, for an inside story on selling products with a smile. You are a talented entertainer and a successful creative salesman. We appreciate your being here, and we wish you a green Christmas. Thank you, Bill Shaw and the radio departmental. Thank you, members of the hit table. And word to our guests, please join us again. Now, before you go, we're a little late, but if one or two of you want to jump up and wave your hand, you can ask Mr. Freeberg a question.
Any other questions? The population of Toledo?